Carlos Ayer was 8 years old when Fidel Castro took over Cuba. 3 years later, he was one of 14,000 children airlifted out of the country. His parents stayed behind. Today, Ayer is a history professor at Yale University. His memories of how the revolution turned his childhood upside down are bittersweet. He's written a memoir called Waiting for Snow in Havana. The Cuba he remembers was nothing like it is today.
The Cuba I grew up in was culturally an extension of the United States. American films, American television programs, American merchandise. When I came to the United States after 2 years of having no American products in Castro's Cuba.
But there are other things about being a small boy in Cuba that you clearly remember that are so very different from anything that we read about here. The kind of jokes that you played, for instance.
We had a lot of time to ourselves without supervision, and there were a group of us in my neighborhood who basically just roamed playing pranks on neighbors, blowing up firecrackers on their porches, doing target practice with our BB guns on the bottles of milk on their front step.
Well, of course, this doesn't sound so different from an American childhood after all.
But we had no snow. We didn't have snowballs to throw at each other, so we threw rocks or almonds. I once got hit on the forehead with an almond, and I passed out because when they're not shelled, when they still come off the tree, they're pretty hard. We lived a very rambunctious life, but we had different things to play with.
You wrote about your dad taking you car surfing, for instance.
Yep.
Can you tell me about that?
All along the waterfront in Havana, there's very broad avenue, the Malecón. It has a seawall right at the edge of the water. And it doesn't take much to send the waves over the seawall, but when we would get a very strong storm, usually with a cold front coming straight from the North Pole, the waves would crash over the seawall and onto the street. Big waves, huge waves. And we would ask our dad to drive the car through these waves. And he did. And sometimes you felt as if the car was about to tip over. And certainly the water that came on top of the car came in such great amounts and so fast that the windshield wipers couldn't keep up. So my dad was driving blind under this water, and we loved it.
Were you and your family aware of the changes that were occurring in Cuba, the things that were going to change your life so thoroughly?
Many nights, I went to sleep to the sound of gunfire off in the distance and bombs going off. So you couldn't help but know that things were out of joint and that some change was inevitable.
You even had a run-in with somebody who was running away from the police one night, didn't you?
We did. We were going home from my grandmother's house and were caught in a shootout as we were parking the car to run into a house for shelter. A man accosted us, grabbed my brother, and said, "Save me, please, save me. They're after me. They're going to kill me." But my father pointed out, "Look, I have two small children. My wife is handicapped," because my mother had polio as a child and only had one usable leg. Said, "We can't really help you. We don't live here. We don't live in this neighborhood. We don't know how to hide you. Go away, please. You're going to get us killed." And the man took a look at my brother and me and ran away. And the next day, we found out he had been shot. We saw his picture in the paper.
I was going to ask you if your parents prepared you for the change that was coming. I guess after an experience like that, you have to feel a little prepared.
We knew change was coming. They weren't prepared for the kind of change that did come. It caught most Cubans by surprise. And I think something that every Cuban knows, but very few Americans know, is that many of the young men who fought against Batista ended up opposing Fidel Castro, and not much later either, within the first year. And many of them ended up in the United States as exiles, and many of them were members of the Bay of Pigs invasion. These are men who had fought against Batista who felt betrayed by Castro, because it wasn't the poor people who rose up against Batista. Of course, this is the case in most places. It was the middle class, and it was the middle class in Cuba that was hardest hit by the changes that Fidel Castro brought about.
You know, we don't often hear about the effects of the change in the economy. I had never, for instance, read until you wrote about it, about being forced to turn in all of your family's money.
That's right. One day, one Sunday, suddenly every bank account in Cuba was wiped out. This was Che Guevara's idea to put everyone on a level playing field. But seeing all of your money disappear in one day was very traumatic for most Cubans, needless to say. Even for a child, I was 9 or 10 when it happened. And it has affected my view of money to this day. I expect something like that to happen every single day. Therefore, I don't have any money in a savings account. I spend it all.
You left, though. You were sent away, I take it, a couple of years after the revolution?
3 years. April 6, 1962.
And where did you go?
Well, I was part of the airlift that brought 14,048 children out of Cuba. And all of us would immediately go to these processing camps in Miami. And from there, we would be dispersed throughout the United States because the camps couldn't hold all of us. And a lot depended on luck, where you ended up. In the case of my brother and me, we were in the camps for a few weeks, and each of us was taken in by a different foster family in Miami. But then there was a horrible mix-up. An uncle of ours had arrived in the United States and had been relocated to Bloomington, Illinois. He was 62 years old and had to start all over again and had a family of his own. So it took him a while to get his act together, and somehow we got lost in the system. So we were supposed to go to our uncle's house, but instead my brother and I ended up in another foster home that was full of children that had already been in trouble with the law. And it was a horrible place. And from there, we finally did end up going to our uncle's house in Bloomington. And then 3.5 years after we left, our mother was able to leave and join us. She was told at the refugee center in Miami, well, you should go to Chicago, especially because you don't speak English and you don't have any skills. You can always get a job at a factory as an assembler. And that's what she ended up doing.
And so you were reunited, finally.
Right. But my father remained behind.
I'm curious about why.
This was very common. And it's very hard to explain. And in my case, it's harder to explain because I never saw him again. So all the communications I had with him after 1962 were basically by letter. He was crushed by the experience, but this happened to many families. If you left Cuba, you had to leave absolutely everything. All you could take with you, 2 changes of clothing. And many families had to struggle with this dilemma. Do I give up everything? Or should I hold on to it? No one imagined that this would last 44 years. My father always thought this can't last more than a few more months, or maybe a year more. But a year turned into 2 years, 3, 4, 5, and he developed heart disease. And as he was making plans to finally leave, because he saw that the end was approaching for him, not for Fidel Castro, unfortunately, he died before he left. He died of a heart attack, and we never saw him again.
He was waiting for a change that never came. And you've never been back, even though it's now possible to go to Cuba again?
Well, it's possible, but there's a hitch. They won't recognize my American citizenship. In Cuba, I am a Cuban citizen and subject to all of their laws and courts as a Cuban. And should anything go wrong while I'm there, I'm theirs. And since there is no American embassy, I think it's a little too risky. And especially after I've written this book, I wouldn't dare go. I'm sure they'll find out about it somehow, and I'll be persona non grata.
Carlos Ayer's memoir is called Waiting for Snow in Havana. And what does he think will happen in Cuba after Castro? Says he never thinks about it. The only Cuba he knows is the one he grew up in.